Welcome to the Mormon Channel Relief Society program. I'm Sharon Eubank of the General Relief Society Board. Today we're discussing the history of Relief Society and the compiling of a Relief Society history. We will also explore some of the stories of the great women of the early days of the church and explore how we can apply some of the characteristics they had into our modern lives. Joining me in the studio today are Relief Society General President Sister Julie B. Beck and former General Young Women President and Relief Society Board Member Sister Susan W. Tanner. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sharon, I'm grateful for this opportunity, and I'm thankful to Sister Tanner for being willing to discuss Relief Society history with me. Sister Tanner is one of my best friends in the world. I served as her counselor for 4.5 years, and before that, our families have been acquainted for generations, I think. So we've had a deep spiritual connection one with another and feel like sisters, and I can't think of anyone I would love talking about this Relief Society with more than Sister Tanner.
And I look to Sister Beck as one of the strong, noble women, besides being a dear friend. We do enjoy talking about these wonderful women in our present and in our past together. I think these kinds of conversations build us as we discuss them together.
We've also studied the history of Relief Society together a lot and have enjoyed sharing the stories of not only the sisters, but the women in our past. So I feel like this is a very appropriate time for us to talk to you about Relief Society history.
Well, speaking of that, Sister Tanner, tell us a little bit about how your interest in the history of Relief Society started.
Well, I think that's a fairly easy question for me to answer. My interest in Relief Society started with my mother. She, of course, was a General Relief Society president when I was a young Relief Society sister, but it was earlier than that. I remember going to singing mothers with my mother when I was tiny. And I can still, I won't do it on this program, but I can still sing some of the songs that those singing mothers sang. And I grew up loving Relief Society and having an interest in what it was that Relief Society did for my mother and for our family and for all of the people whose lives my mother touched. I think so many of the things that my mother gave to people, she learned through Relief Society to give. So my interest began there, but it's hard for me to pinpoint where I started wanting to know more about the early Relief Society and the early sisters. Probably that interest grew out of a pioneer heritage that I have, admiring the great faith and the great sacrifice and strength of women in my own personal heritage, whose lives really are a heritage for all women in the church because they lived the way we want to live in our lives now.
Thank you. Sister Beck, maybe you could just say why you feel it's so important for sisters all around the world, no matter what circumstance they're in, to know about their history and be tied into the early history of Relief Society.
History provides the context of everything we do. Even the scriptures start with a history. We start out the Old Testament with the story of Adam and Eve in Genesis, and the Lord establishes the foundation of who we are and our identity through that story. The same thing happens with Relief Society. If we understand how the Lord worked with women and how he engaged with them, starting from the ancient church and then into the new and restored church that happened with Joseph Smith, it provides our context. Through that history, we develop an understanding of our identity. It gives us relevance in helping build the kingdom. It provides our connections with other people. It delineates our value, not just to other people, but to our Heavenly Father. So the history is the story that really gives us the flesh on the bones of who we are. It's important to know that so that we aren't chasing after an identity that won't feed us and won't build us.
Both of you are mothers of women who are now mothers themselves. What are some of the stories from the history or from the things that you've learned that you want to tell your own daughters, as they are now mothers themselves in sometimes difficult circumstances? What are some of the stories or examples that you want them to know about?
I loved learning about Diantha Young. She was the wife of Brigham Young, and she was the third General Relief Society president. And she had a great faith and a great sensitivity and a healing spirit. In fact, as she and Eliza R. Snow went around the Salt Lake Valley and the Utah Territory reestablishing relief societies in the early church, Eliza R. Snow was called the head of the Relief Society, and she was called the heart. I just grew to love her as I read about her. She suffered a lot of difficult things. When her mother died, she was particularly upset about that and couldn't seem to quite overcome the sadness in her life. But after suffering that way for several weeks, she heard her mother's voice in sort of a dream. And it was her mother telling her one of the things that she had taught her. And she said, "There will always be huge boulders in any sailor's life, but a good sailor will sail around them." And that comforted her, and it helped her get over that difficult part of her life. That's the kind of thing that my daughters would benefit from knowing. First of all, that sorrow comes into every life, and that some of these great women that we admire had sad times and hard times, and they got over them. The other thing I loved about her was the way she mothered. She mothered not only her own children, she mothered all children, and she was sensitive. And one of the things that she admonished the women to do once she became the General Relief Society president is to gather their little ones around them and to not neglect them and to love them and to teach them. And she pulled children in and taught them and loved them and did all the things that she admonished other sisters to do. She's a great role model for me, and I think would be for any young mother in any age.
I think those are relevant for today. Those are great stories. Sister Beck, what did you think about?
I think that our history is a history of strong, righteous, faithful, dedicated women. And it's a long line of women to do that. And it's important today for my daughters to know that they're not isolated in this time and space, that they have a heritage that they connect to that stretches back a long way, and that they're the link to the future. If the future is going to be a line of strong, faithful, dedicated women, it will be because of them. So looking back to those women, I think, is important. The other thing that I think they learn from reading the history of the Sisters in Relief Society and the history of the work of Relief Society is that Heavenly Father has always expected His daughters to lead for good, that they have a definite leadership role. It's not a passive role. It is a role that requires the strength and the leadership in their own lives, in their own homes, that they are being watched and their examples. Many of the greatest examples in Relief Society for me are written in my own history, my own life, and the people I've encountered, and they won't ever be written for public consumption. But I remember Sister Marjorie Burgess, for instance, who is the mother of Brother Dean Burgess, who was in the Young Men General Presidency a while ago. And Sister Burgess was one of those strong and immovable women and quite imposing and a little bit scary to me when I was a new Relief Society sister. I was assigned to be her visiting teaching companion, and I was terrified to be her companion because I knew she had this sort of strict way of doing things. She was a friend of my mother's, so that was really the way I knew I could trust her. And she called and came over and sat with me and said, "Now here's the way we do visiting teaching." She gave me a lesson about it and then told me what she expected from me and what she was going to do and encouraged me. And it turned out that it was a great love relationship with Marjorie Burgess. She was strong. She was faithful. I loved that woman and learned so much from her. She's not someone I would have chosen to connect to naturally, but I was so grateful for her leadership in my life. That's not in the general history of Relief Society, but it's in my history, and it was a blessing to me to know her.
You mentioned something about a long line of strong women. And there are often misconceptions about our church that women don't have a voice and they don't have a place. And what is it about the history that overcomes those misconceptions? Or what is it about studying history that proves that women have a voice and have always had a voice?
If you look at the scriptures, you will see that in the New Testament, the Savior invited women to be part of his work right at the beginning of his ministry. And the same thing happened when he started the church in 1830, just a few short months after the church was formally organized. The first female leader of the church, Emma Smith, received a revelation directly for her, teaching her some important principles about leadership and the expectations for her. I find that very important, that we weren't a leftover part in the Savior's ministry or in the Restoration, but we were integral and right at the beginning.
And Emma Smith was in that revelation, was told that she should expound the scriptures. And that's, I think, really important too. I think maybe typically people would think that is a possibly a male role, but that was a specific assignment she was given. And Eliza R. Snow carried that role on with the sisters. She expected them in their early meetings to be articulate. They would have Relief Society meetings where they would do needlework or quilts or something that they would be able to share with others or give to others as a type of relief. But they would put those things away at a certain point, and then they would stand and express their feelings or expound the scriptures or teach one another. And that was a really important thing for those early sisters to learn to do, to talk. It was one of the things that was admired by people outside of our society that looked in. I think there was a feeling sometimes among outsiders that Mormon women were beleaguered or that they were not articulate, that they had no voice. And when they could hear these women standing and talking about ideas and feelings and testimonies, they wrote about them as being dignified and noble women. It's wonderful to read those stories about those women and to feel that that's our heritage and that's who we need to be now.
From studying the history, we boiled down really what the Lord meant, and it comes out in section 25 that the purposes of Relief Society are to help sisters increase their faith and personal righteousness. And the Lord admonished Emma Smith to do that, to grow in her faith and in her righteousness and make some personal changes. Also, another purpose is to strengthen families and homes. In that first revelation, there were specific instructions about Emma's family and her home and how to direct the work there. A third purpose is to seek out and help those who are in need, and that was also delineated in that revelation, to look around for help that could be done in the kingdom. And a specific assignment was to take care of compiling some hymns. That was a great need in the church at the time, and she was assigned to do that. Those three purposes are things that we can carry around in our heads. We can remember them, and in a variety of ways, implement them in our lives. They're as personal as we are, but seeking the Lord's will and revelation on how to implement those purposes in our lives is very individual and can be directed by revelation. But those are the things he expects from his daughters as they help build his kingdom. We're here to help build his kingdom. He's promised that his kingdom will be built, and it's been prophesied for thousands of years. The great thing for my history is that this wasn't a work reserved for a certain body of men. He invited his daughters to be part of it as well as his sons. And what an honor it is to be part of that.
What would both of you say to women who might feel like it's fine to study pioneer history if you live in the United States and that's part of your history, but I live in Guatemala City or I live in the Philippines or I live in Tonga. Why are those stories about pioneer women relevant to me?
We've talked about it. We've used words like strong and noble and dignified women. Those women could be transplanted onto any soil. It's who they were and what they did with who they were. The things that I love about reading about the strong women in our past is their characteristics, their testimonies, their ability to sacrifice and to serve can happen anywhere in the world. That does happen anywhere in the world. It teaches us what Relief Society is anywhere in the world.
I watched Relief Society from its genesis to growth of a group of strong, great women in Brazil. I was a young girl. I was an observer mostly of the work my mother did. She was called to be the Relief Society president of a mission in Brazil, and they had about 45 or so branches, and some of those had some functioning Relief Society elements because they had sisters who had moved there or lived there who knew something about it. But in an organized way and coordinated way, it had never happened before. So in preparation for the first stake in Brazil, that was part of the work, was to organize the sisters in their districts with some leadership and to get visiting teaching organized, to have meetings organized to teach the women the skills they needed to bless their homes and become self-reliant, to help them learn how to study the gospel. They'd never done that. Most of the women who were coming in at that time of great growth of the church had no background in studying or teaching the scriptures, and they didn't know how to do that. I saw some of those beginning sisters grasp hold of the idea that they could lead and be effective, and the Lord would guide them and direct them, that the Lord loved them just as much as he loved his sons. They took on new light, new meaning, and wrote lessons and directed things and taught and developed leadership skills until they really were the wind beneath the uplifting of the church in Brazil. To see, I know the woman who was the first temple matron in Brazil. I know the woman who was the first stake Relief Society president. And I think they were beginners at one point, but they became so exemplary in how to build the Lord's kingdom. That, to me, is very faith-promoting.
You're talking about the work of sons and the work of daughters, and I wonder if both of you might comment on how our history helps us understand the connection between priesthood and Relief Society and how they function in the church.
There is an inseparable connection between Relief Society and priesthood. It's as if we can't have one without the other. And Joseph Smith, at the very first meeting, promised the sisters that he was organizing them in something that was better, he said, than just a benevolent society or a serviceable society that was very common in the day. And what that something better was their connection to the priesthood. First of all, he organized them under the authority of the priesthood, and then after the pattern of the priesthood. I think this flows very nicely from what Sister Beck was just talking about as she saw the Relief Society grow up in Brazil. She saw these women learning that they were leaders and learning how to lead. The pattern that was established was the same pattern that was established in priesthood quorums. That is, both the priesthood quorum and the Relief Society organization are service oriented. The brethren are organized to serve others. The sisters are organized to serve others. The priesthood quorums are organized to teach men what their duties are, who they are, and what their responsibilities are. The Relief Society organization was organized to teach women what their responsibilities are and who they are and how they can accomplish their work. And so there are these patterns that both the men and the women have in the way they're organized, in the way they function, and in the way they teach us how to accomplish our purposes.
One of the other patterns that comes about is that we all function under the power and the authority of the priesthood. A Relief Society on a ward level functions under the direction of a bishop, and they aren't authorized to function outside of that organization that is directed by a bishop. The same with the stake, that the stake president holds the keys, The Relief Society is there to help the state president fulfill his mandate to provide that defense and a refuge for the stake. So they derive all their authority and all their power from the priesthood, just as do the quorums and the brethren of the priesthood. Those are great parallels for us.
Thank you for giving those good examples. I'm thinking as I listen to you speak about women in the modern age that are beleaguered with so much information, so many pulls on them, so many decisions to make, and so many voices that they listen to. What is it about the history that helps women implement Relief Society in their lives in the midst of all of that chaos that's going on in modern times? How is the history really relevant? How does it make a difference to the life that they live now?
I hope that it helps them focus. Sister Beck mentioned that in the early days, the sisters were organized to build their faith and testimony in righteousness, that they were organized to strengthen their families, and they were organized to give relief in extraordinary ways. Those focuses continue in Relief Society today, and it feels to me that if sisters in our day can look back to those early focuses that we were taught in the beginning, that it will help us put aside the things of the world and concentrate or see more clearly a few simple, essential things that we need to do and be in our lives.
The history, I think, helps prioritize what we do and how we use our time. There's so much busyness now and so much competition and so many pulls and attractions. The history seems to cut all that away and say, at its most basic level, what is life? What is my purpose? What is my meaning? Do I have to chase after dreams? And do I know if something's important or not? The history helps establish that path. The history has provided the groove that we walk in or the track that we walk in. Another way that the history helps us is to see how the Lord has worked through women in the past and has revealed his will to them. And we see that pattern over and over again, how they have, women in the past have received revelation. They've received heavenly help. That gives us the hope and the faith that if he's done it before, he'll help us again. If the Lord can answer the prayer of a certain woman 100 years ago, he could answer my prayer today. If he helped a sister 50 years ago, he can help me today. That's an important piece of understanding, to know I'm not in this alone. My situation may seem unique to me, but the way out has been provided by reading the stories of faithful women. I look at Eliza Snow, who felt that the access to the Spirit was the most important thing she could have. And if she didn't have the Spirit with her, life was hard and weighty and nearly impossible. And when you read her story and how sick she was for decades, how lonely she was, how abandoned in some ways she was in the trek across the plains, how reliant she was on the help of friends and how helpless her life seemed. And yet, when she had the Spirit with her, she felt it was all okay. She could make it. That was her quest always, was to have the Spirit with her. I learned a lot from reading about her desires to have the Spirit and how important that was to her. I loved reading about Belle Spafford as a president who helped for a long time, almost 30 years. She served as the Relief Society president. That's how she helped guide Relief Society in a time of great change when we sort of changed from the way the pioneers did things and brought Relief Society into a modern era when the church was starting to think more globally. How did she know how to apply the principles of the past to the future? A lot of it was, all of it really came through revelation and through counseling with priesthood leaders. I loved reading those accounts and how strengthening that was.
Belle Spafford was an inspiration to me, too, because she wanted to pull in and just serve the church. And this was at a time when the outside world was maybe becoming more sordid. President George Albert Smith counseled her to go out and make her influence felt in the world as well. So not only was she influencing sisters within our body of sisters in the church, but she was making her influence felt in the world as she participated in the National Organization for Women. Another thing I was thinking about, the worldliness around us and how do we sort through. We, I think, have some of the very best advice that we could get for our day that was given to Emma Smith in that Section 25. We think of that being a simpler time, and maybe not that they weren't bombarded so much by things of the world, but in that revelation, she's told to lay aside the things of the world and seek for the things of a better. And that was excellent counsel and revelation to her in her day and continues to be for us in our day. At the end of that revelation, I love that it says this is a revelation to Emma and to all.
You're listening to the Mormon Channel Relief Society program. We are joined by Sister Julie B. Beck, Relief Society General President, and Sister Susan W. Tanner, former Young Women General President. I want to follow up on something Sister Beck alluded to. You both have been general presidents. And is there something from the history that strengthened your testimony as you lead a large organization?
It seems like hundreds of examples. Just reading about each one of those women who served in such a capacity helped me. There were stories of how they were ordinary women. They didn't always feel that they had any extra special gifts that they had to give. But they were consecrated women, and they were willing, when asked, to serve and to give their all. I guess that was encouraging to me to know that they're not always sure really where their gifts lie, but maybe the beginning is that their gifts lie in their willingness to sacrifice and consecrate and give. I had such a testimony as I read about different ones of them that their specific gifts were needed at the times when they were called to serve. Like Esther, they were raised up for such a time as this. And they're different gifts, and there were different times and different needs. All of those things are very encouraging to me in any service that I give in the church or with my family.
Like Sister Tanner, I was struck by the humility of the sisters, that none of them felt that they had the capacity actually to do this, but they were called and they said yes, and they were set apart for an assignment, and they could do it with that charge and with the Lord's help. I thought of Sister Lyman directing Relief Society during the Depression and World War II, and what a downtime that was in the lives of families. I think that we're working against a deceitful and determined enemy in the battles of today. So drawing courage from her, not getting discouraged, from continuing and holding forth with the principles, she counseled the sisters, strengthen your faith and hold on. Don't get discouraged at this time. We know who is at the head. And then she really focused the sisters on their homes and building their homes. It was a time when the messages from the world were drawing the women away from their homes, tempting them to leave their homes because of the economies. She said, your home is your priority, and she led out with that. Then she also led great relief efforts all around the world and encouraged the sisters to seek out and help others who were in a worse situation than they were. And we have wonderful stories of sisters in war-torn Europe who, against great odds, with that kind of direction and vision, continued on the work of Relief Society, even though they had nothing. Knowing these women and knowing the work has been very faith-promoting to me.
Do you have any counsel for women in our audience who may not love to read, may not be that interested in history? What kind of encouragement would you give them to take the time that it would take to learn some of this history of Relief Society?
It doesn't take too much time or effort. There are stories that can be listened to. There are pictures that teach and tell us about these women. There's oral history that we pass down. As Sister Beck mentioned earlier, some of her own Relief Society history. It doesn't have to be 150 years ago for us to learn from women. That can be grandmothers, mothers, aunts, dear women in the ward or branches where we live that can teach us about strong, faithful, noble women. Not everybody does read, and that's okay. There are still ways for us to have examples of wonderful, righteous women in our lives.
One of the things that I think we should remember is that history continues to be written. We always talk about history as if it were 100 years ago or 50 years ago, but 100 years from now, people will talk about us and talk about our history. I'm wondering what I'm recording and remembering that will be a strength to people who come after me. I want to write down things that will strengthen my granddaughters and my great-granddaughters that will build and strengthen them as the world continues to become more distressing and more oppressive to them and more confusing. What am I leaving behind? I want to start writing down and trying to remember the sisters who have been my visiting teachers, who have nurtured me and blessed me. That's history in my life. And I think in their own right, they are as powerful and strong as some of the better known names.
Right now, my daughters and my mother and I are getting together and we're each talking about what our mothers taught us and how they taught us. And we're trying to record that. It stemmed from our reading of the 2000 Stripling Warriors and what their mothers taught them. And we started looking to try to discern what the mothers taught them and how they taught them. And then we've wanted to do that in our own personal history. And every sister can do that.
That's a wonderful thing.
We can record where the Lord has sent us. I have a lot of personal experiences where I know the Lord has sent me to help someone. And inspiration I received as a visiting teacher to go here at a certain time to do a certain thing and not always knowing the outcome or what it meant, but knowing that I was sent. And recording those experiences is a sacred opportunity. It helps us see where the Lord is revealing His will to us in our own lives. We can write those histories today, and then that's available for other people to strengthen them later.
As we close this episode of the Mormon Channel Relief Society program, we have been speaking with Sister Julie B. Beck, Relief Society General President, and Sister Susan W. Tanner, the former General Young Women President. Thank you so much both for joining us.
Thank you for having us. I love talking about the Relief Society history.
I feel very privileged to have been invited. It's been a wonderful time to talk together.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Mormon Channel Relief Society program. For more information on the Relief Society program on the Mormon Channel, visit our website at radio.lds.org. If you want to share your testimony or experience with the Mormon Channel, email us at radio.ldschurch.org. Thanks for listening.